Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Christine Wells Wansley got her son's phone back from his friend. She opened Snapchat. Nolan had two accounts. Both of them were empty. The day he was at the beach, she says. No photos, no videos, no messages, no saved stories, nothing. An 18-year-old college football player who otherwise documented everything he did, every hangout, every cookout, every road trip, and his Snapchat accounts look like they've been created 5 minutes ago. There are explanations for empty Snapchat accounts that don't involve anyone touching his phone. There are explanations where it does involve people touching your phone. The answer is we don't know right now. The app auto-deletes messages by default. That is important to know. Horn Island has unreliable cell coverage. There is a possibility that settings were changed. Maybe he just wasn't using it that weekend. That seems to be the story. A lot of people are telling, people who knew him, people who didn't know him, people who were on the boat, people who were not on the boat, people who had never touched Horn Island, who just go out on boats on the weekend in water, that will easily tell you, yeah, we pretty much all leave our phones on the boat. It's the one time a week, one time a month, one time of the summer where there's no activity on the device because we're disconnected from it. There are reasonable explanations. Those are reasonable explanations. There are unreasonable explanations to things like that. But those are reasonable. Someone getting a device, someone knowing his password to get into the device and then into his account and deleting it could also be a reasonable explanation. It's not like we haven't seen that in cases before. But it's important that we are reasonable about what we're talking about before we actually have facts. Understand, these are all possibly reasonable explanations. How do we get to that explanation? Well, we got to go to the phone company. We got to go to Snapchat. We got to find out from them exactly what is going on. And that's what's happening right now. So I'm not here to tell you his friends deleted things to cover something up. I'm also not here to tell you that he just didn't use his phone. I'm here to say we don't know. But it is fair to ask the questions on both sides. It is. Because what his mother found on that phone didn't match the kid that she raised and what she knew about him. That's a detail that changed the shape of this case for this family. Not because it proves anything, but because it left her with a question nobody in the system was answering. On July 29th, Christine filed court-ordered subpoenas against five major tech platforms through Jackson County Chancellery Court. Meta, which owns Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, plus Snapchat, TikTok, and Life360, the GPS tracking app. The subpoenas demand subscriber information, direct messages, photos, videos, GPS location data, login histories, password reset records, and IP addresses tied to Nolan's account. The companies have 21 days to produce everything. These aren't polite requests of a grieving mother. They're court orders filed through her attorney at Carol Bufkin, the Mississippi firm working alongside Ben Crum. And here's the part that matters, too. Whatever those accounts contained before they went empty, if they contained anything, may still exist on those company servers. What disappears from the phone doesn't disappear from the back end. His mother knows that, and she's going after the back end. Good. Good, good, good. Because things like that should not be left up for conjecture. That is good for everyone involved. It's good for mom to get answers. It's good for the people that are sitting out there being accused on the internet of doing something horrific. Because facts are facts. And if facts show us something questionable happened, we'll find that out. If facts show us, well, the phone was on the boat. He didn't touch it. That's why there's nothing there. We'll find that out too. She'd already found something that didn't add up when she compared Life360's location data to Snapchat's location data for the same time period. The two apps told different stories about where people were. Two platforms, two different versions of the same night. And this is coming from her. That discrepancy is one of the things the surfer side records will resolve. But it's not the only one. For anyone hearing about Nolan Wells for the first time, here's what happened. It's not going to be a full, 20-minute explanation. Here's the cliff notes, in case you're just joining this story. Nolan was 18 years old from Ocean Springs, Mississippi, football player at Southwest Mississippi Community College. On July 4th, he traveled by boat to Horn Island, an uninhabited barrier island, roughly 8 miles off the Mississippi coast with a group of friends for a holiday party. A lot of people were out there, multiple boats. He was the only black member of his friend group, and at some point in that afternoon, the boat Nolan had arrived on started taking on water. Faulty build pump. His friends called the Sea-Tow, a private towing service for help, and according to those friends, Nolan chose to stay behind on the island. They said he was talking to a girl and told them he'd catch a ride back on another boat. They left. They had his phone with them. Why they had his phone with them? We don't know the answer to that, other than Nolan had left it on the boat when he was on the island. 2 days later, on July 6, a U.S. park ranger found Nolan's body in the water off the island's northwest tip. The Jackson County Sheriff told Nolan's mother less than an hour after the body was recovered, and here's where all the conspiracy begins, again, because words have meaning, Sheriff. And any other sheriff out there watching this who speaks to the public, your words matter. He believed the death was accidental because he saw no foul play. Which may damn well be the truth. But you didn't have the information to make that statement at that time. You want to incite a bunch of people to go, they're not going to look at this seriously. Come to a conclusion before you have the evidence. Yes, from everything we see thus far, everything that has panned out in this case to this moment, at least in terms of the relationships that Nolan seems to have had with these friends, we don't see any leakage coming out of, oh, his friends hated him because he was black, or anything of that sort. We don't see anything of that sort. Trust me, of all the digital data that these friends have over the last however many years that they've been buddies with Nolan and how highly they speak of him, if there was anything and somebody was like, I don't think the world needs to see this, I think we might have seen it by now. You know how much money TMZ would pay if someone actually had like some sort of video of these friends being abhorrently horrible to their friend? Or some tabloid, if somebody has that video, some kid could go become a millionaire tomorrow if that video actually existed. So far, no video. So far, no example. No text, no pictures, no nothing of that sort. If it exists, bring it forward. But we haven't seen that yet. No, look, am I not here to say it doesn't exist? I don't know. But a month into this damn thing, I'll tell you, I'd be shocked if we're going to learn more that his friends had some sort of horrible racial tension with their friend. Because all the examples that we've shown, that we've seen, that we've learned, that we've absorbed from everybody here, shows that that's not how the dynamics were in this relationship. I could be wrong, but I'm basing on what I've seen so far. I'm not basing it on a garbled call to the tow company where you can barely make out the audio of what's being said and people are, I hear this. I'm going on my 30th year working in audio production. Started in 1996 at 14. I know how to listen to audio. I know how to pull things back. I know I tried with this and I got nothing. There's a lot of apps these days, by the way, and you should be aware of this. Descript is one of them. There are others where you can throw audio into something and it says, well, we're gonna studioize this audio. We're gonna make it better. And then it adds, works with AI and puts words and it manipulates the waveforms to make it sound like something so it's easier to hear. That's not bringing out audio. That's putting artificial pieces of audio onto existing audio so you can understand it better. That is not deciphering raw audio or pulling frequencies back this way or that way to try and make out what someone is saying. At the end of the day, when you have audio like we have on this case, like that phone call, there just isn't a real clear way of truly getting to what that thing picked up, because that's what it picked up. And you can interpret it this way or that way. At the end of the day, I'm telling you, I don't know what the fuck any of that says. I tried to listen. I can hear some words here and there. But I also ask you this. I mean, the guy who's on the phone, the friend who's calling the tow company, who seems kind of dopey in the call, so does the operator. All of it just seems like young people in chaos. Ask yourself this. Does that voice sound like someone who's covering up a murder? Or does it sound like kind of a typical dopey teenager on his uncle's boat, who doesn't know what to do, who's been drinking, who's being inconvenienced by water coming on, and stupid questions being asked by an operator who won't get them help as their boat goes down? I don't know. I mean, maybe that's my conjecture. Maybe if I was covering up a murder, I wouldn't be just as blasé as that call was. But I don't know. That's my conjecture on it. I could be wrong. I'm happy to say we are following this case wherever it goes. But I'm telling you, that's my take on some of that. So where does this go? What happens next? That's what this video is about. The official state autopsy was performed on July 7th by the Mississippi State Medical Examiner's Office. The results haven't been released. The toxicology hasn't been released. Jackson County District Attorney Angel Myers McClarth says the autopsy report will be withheld until a grand jury reviews the case. She says it's standard procedure. And it is. Every unnatural death in the county goes before a grand jury. That's how their system works there. Let's not pretend it's something that it isn't. She won't say when the grand jury will convene. She's asked the public to remain patient and avoid making assumptions. The family didn't remain patient. And I don't blame them. If it was my kid, I wouldn't remain patient either. I'd be knocking down doors. She sent Nolan's body to Washington, D.C. for an independent autopsy performed by Dr. Roger Mitchell, the former chief medical examiner for the District of Columbia. He's got some credentials. Colin Kaepernick paid for it. The results came back undetermined, pending investigation. Dr. Mitchell said he could not rule out that non-accidental factors contributed or caused Nolan's death, but he also flagged significant limitations. He couldn't directly observe the airway or lungs for water. He couldn't examine the stomach contents. The throat had been removed during the state's autopsy, which, again, is not unusual in forensic pathology, but it meant the independent examiner was working with an incomplete body. This is what would happen to any second autopsy. This is what happens in every second autopsy. The second autopsy is what it is. You can't peel an orange twice. There's one shot to go in and do that. And whether you trust the actual medical examiner to do it or not is a whole other conversation. But this is what a second autopsy looks like. Do I wish it was more thorough and could have answered these fucking questions? Without a doubt. Everyone does. But the absence of the information does not mean some sort of cover-up or conspiracy. It means that's what happens when you get to do a second autopsy. He also noted the area of red discoloration in the back of Nolan's head, but couldn't determine the cause because of decomposition. And the state's toxicology results were never shared with him. Everything Dr. Mitchell couldn't access, the state had first. The intact airway, the intact lungs, the throat structures, the stomach contents, the toxicology, you know, the important stuff. The state medical examiner examined Nolan's body on July 7th, one day after recovery, before significant decomposition set in. Whatever that examination revealed is sitting in a file inside the medical examiner's office, and nobody outside that office and the DA's office is allowed to see it. So here's where this case stands, and here's what's coming. There are five live threads, and every one of them could move in the coming weeks. Every one of them pushes us towards one of two outcomes: a tragedy nobody caused, or answers that should have come by now and haven't. The first and most important is the official state autopsy and toxicology. This is the piece that decides things. A preliminary Mississippi Department of Marine Resources document from July 5th, the day before Nolan's body was found, notes that witnesses reported he had heavy alcohol intake on the island. If the toxicology confirms significant intoxication and the autopsy finds nothing, or that a drowning in shallow Gulf water doesn't explain, the accidental scenario carries real weight. An intoxicated 18-year-old alone in an uninhabited barrier island at night, 8 miles from shore with no phone, that's a scenario that ends in tragedy without anyone laying a hand on him. But that autopsy also had access to things the independent one didn't. The red discoloration on the back of Nolan's head, the state examiner saw it first. With a better preserved body, what did they make of it? The throat structures, if there's damage there that decomposition doesn't account for, that's not consistent with drowning alone. But again, we don't know the answer to that yet. And the state medical examiner who performed that autopsy, Dr. Stacy Turner, is facing renewed scrutiny over her role in multiple disputed death investigations involving black residents in Mississippi. The credibility of that autopsy is going to be challenged no matter what it says. The family knows it, and Ben Crump knows it. The second thread is the grand jury. A DA says presenting Nolan's case to a grand jury is routine, and she's right. It is standard procedure in Jackson County for unnatural deaths, but a grand jury doesn't review evidence and file a report. It decides whether criminal charges are warranted, and the DA controls what evidence goes in front of those jurors. She decides what gets presented. She frames the narrative. She asks the questions. Grand jury proceedings in Mississippi are secret. They are in pretty much every place. The family won't be in the room. The public won't know what was shown or how it was characterized. And the DA still hasn't set a date. A grand jury that returns a no bill, no charges in a case with this racial backdrop and this level of national attention, that outcome doesn't end anything. It accelerates everything. An indictment would accelerate it differently. Either way, the most consequential decision in Nolan Wells' case gets made in a closed room by people who answer to no one outside it on a timeline controlled by one person who hasn't committed to a date. The third thread is the tech subpoenas. And I think this is where a lot of answers are going to land. This is where Christine's discovery about the empty Snapchat account pays off. The server-side records from five platforms should settle the location discrepancy between Life360 and Snapchat. Login histories will show whether someone accessed Nolan's account after he went missing. Password reset records will show whether anyone tried to get into those accounts from a device that wasn't his. IP addresses will show which devices accessed the accounts and from where. If those platforms show that Nolan's accounts were accessed after he went missing, logins from devices that weren't his, password resets, he didn't initiate, that raises questions. The accidental drowning scenario doesn't answer. If the records match the friend's timeline and show nothing unusual, that's significant too. The family needs to know either way, and they get those records through the court, outside the criminal investigation, on their own timeline, in their own hands. That's important. The fourth thing to understand is the social media investigation running in parallel with all of this and why most of it won't matter in a courtroom. TMZ enhanced the CETO distress call that Nolan's friends made when their boat was taking on water. The enhanced version allegedly contains background voices saying things like, "Is he dead?" and "Check his chest." That's interpretation. A digital forensic expert named Robert Freed analyzed both versions. TMZ's clip is 20 seconds longer than the original, carries a different digital fingerprint, and Freed's team couldn't corroborate the claim phrases. Someone who does this for a living, who has no skin in the game, saying, "I don't know." Meanwhile, the mystery girl Nolan was allegedly talking to has been identified. 19 years old, her sister says she was under the impression Nolan was leaving on the boat with his friends. And Bart Edmonston Jr., a former high school teammate of Nolan's, whose name got pulled into the online theories, has retained an attorney and plans to file defamation suits against people who are saying he did it. His lawyer says the accusations are fabricated, that a circulating photo misidentifies the woman in it, that Edmonston cooperated fully with investigators, and that he turned over his boat, his GPS data, and his phone. The social media swarm is moving faster than the sheriff's office, faster than the DA, faster than the grand jury. But speed isn't evidence. Enhanced audio with a mismatched digital fingerprint, misidentified photos, AI-generated content, theories built on theories, none of that survives cross-examination. The subpoenas will. The official autopsy will. The server-side records from five tech companies will. The distinction matters because the people who care about Nolan Wells deserve to know the difference between what goes viral and what goes into evidence. The move the family made on the day of Nolan's funeral tells you everything about where their trust in the system lands. The day Nolan was buried, July 20th, Center Point Church in Ocean Springs, Tyler Perry paid for the funeral. His family's attorneys sent 10-page preservations of evidence letters, not just to the friends, not just to their families, to the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, to the DA's office, to the coroner, to the state medical examiner, every institution, and every individual in the chain. The letters direct recipients to suspend any automatic deletion or overwrite functions, to preserve all materials in their original form, unaltered form, to treat litigation as reasonably anticipated. The sheriff recalled it no foul play within an hour. The DA, who's sealing the autopsy until a grand jury, she hasn't scheduled. It's not for her to schedule. The medical examiner, whose office is under scrutiny, the friends who left an island with Nolan's phone came back without Nolan. The family sent all of them the same message on the same day. "We're coming, and we need you to keep everything." And there's nothing wrong with them coming. They lost their son. They want answers. They deserve to see what this evidence shows and what it is evidence of. And it may be evidence of nothing. Or it may be evidence of something. There's nothing wrong with them asking the questions and saying, "Let's hold on to this for everyone's sake." It's not a family waiting for the system to deliver answers. It's a family building a parallel case. The criminal track and the civil track are now running side by side. The DA controls the grand jury timeline. The family controls the subpoena timeline. The civil litigation preservation letters lock everyone's record in place while both tracks advance. And here's what matters about the civil side in a civil courtroom. The burden of proof is lower. preponderance of evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. The family controls the presentation. They choose the witnesses. They frame the questions. If the grand jury returns a no bill, the civil case doesn't stop. It might be the only place his family ever gets to put their evidence in front of a jury and demand answers under oath. If there's any evidence that points to anything uncouth. But again, we don't know. The criminal investigation and the family's investigation are racing each other, I should say. Whoever produces answers first seems to shape the public understanding of what happened to Nolan Wells and Horn Island. It's important, though, what you put forward, because if you put things forward that aren't true, it hurts your credibility. I'm saying that right now to the family. When your attorney puts out photos that are easily disprovable to be from another day and you're insinuating that it's something else than what it actually is, it hurts your credibility. So be very, very careful about who you surround yourself with and who says they're your friend right now and is truly acting in your best interest. Because from the outside looking in, I'm going to tell you there's a couple folks that I think have questionable interests here, and it's nothing to do with your family's or Nolan's well-being. You want the truth. Everyone wants the truth. I don't know that some people do. Some people want a narrative, and some people want a story that furthers their professional accomplishments, I put in air quotes. Be careful. Because everybody raising their hand saying, oh, this is horrible. It is horrible. I can't fucking imagine going through it. But there are vipers out there that will come in, cozy up next to you, make you think that they're on your side, and they will steal all credibility you have when you are simply asking for answers and the truth. So be very careful who you continue to associate yourself with, because that may be the worst thing for getting to the truth at the end of the day. The family, by every action they've taken, from the independent autopsy to the preservation letters to the tech subpoenas, has made it clear that they are not leaving this to Mississippi's institutions. I don't blame you one bit. Not to a sheriff who drew his conclusions in an hour. Not to a DA who's not set a date yet. Not to a medical examiner who's doing the autopsy. Five threads, the official autopsy and toxicology sealed behind a grand jury wall. The grand jury itself, unscheduled, controlled by one prosecutor, controlled in secret. The tech subpoenas, with the 21-day clock now running, the civil preservation letters, locking evidence in place across every institution and individual, and the social media firestorm generating noise that matters to the public, but may never matter to the courtroom. Every one of those threads is live. Every one could move in the coming weeks, and every one of them points to two directions, in one of two directions, towards a heartbreaking accident that no system failed to prevent, or towards something that happened on the island that still hasn't been explained almost a month later. Where it goes, we will follow it in any way. The truth is what matters. Let's see where it takes us. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there. If you have not already, please do follow us on podcast form, audio form, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, iHeart. The link is right there. That'll take you to the link tree where you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you so choose to listen to your podcast. So you take us wherever you go beyond just YouTube. Do check that out. Links right there. Or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get podcasts. All right. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go over to another big one this week that continues. An 18-year-old football player gets on a boat with his friends on the 4th of July. They go to an island 10 miles off the Mississippi coast. No cell service, no facilities, no way off unless someone takes you. His friends come back. Nolan Wells does not. 2 days later, a park ranger finds his body face down in the water. The friends say he chose to stay behind to talk to a girl. The girl's own sister says Nolan told Katie that he was going back on the boat with the boys. The state did an autopsy and is not releasing it yet until it gets in front of a grand jury. The person who did the autopsy already has a string of questions behind her, which we're learning about. The family flew his body to Washington for a second autopsy, and the pathologist couldn't determine how he died, partly because the state had already removed his throat, which is part of the process in a lot of autopsies. Not saying that's abnormal, but the absence of information is there, and then we get the absence of answers, and the state's not giving them to us. The DA says a grand jury will review it. The sheriff says no foul play before the autopsy was even finished. It's a shit show. And the only question anyone in this country can stop asking is the one that still has to be answered. What happened to Nolan Wells on that island? Your thoughts are welcomed in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to dig into this case. The girl on the island, her sister says Nolan told her that he was getting back on the boat with the boys. This is one of the questions from you guys. The boys say Nolan told him he was staying with the girl. Crump, the attorney for the family, has said himself, somebody's not telling the truth, so which is it? Because one of those stories is a lie, and the lie tells you everything about what actually happened on the island. I think that's the problem with the question is a problem to begin with, because everybody's looking at it as it's this or it's that.
Right.
It's black or it's white. And it's not. It's
what
not.
If it's both?
What it
two
can easily
can
be both.
Be right at the same time.
Todd, how many times have you been at a gathering where you've told somebody, yeah, we'll talk in a little bit. And then you tell, I'll see you later to somebody else. And then you disappear.
Todd, I mean, all the time.
This is Todd's going to a get together. For this is, and that, where's Todd? Oh, I think he already left. What? Yeah. But people do that. People do that. And it's, and I mean, and it may be because, you know, you just want to get the hell out of there. And it can also be because he's mixed on what he wants to do. I'm going to go talk to the girl. Okay, you go do that. There's other boats here. There's other friends, other rides. You can get it. Okay. As your friends, you're thinking, okay, he's going to go do whatever it's going to do. That's not what our son would do. Well, your son's 18 and drinking on an island. Would your son, I mean, there's things people do, teenagers do, that parents also think, my son would never do that. Well, surprise. You know, or he told the girl, I'm taking the ride back with my friends. Gets there, the boat's gone. Can't find her. There's a lot of plausible possibilities here. And I think that is the biggest problem going into this case is thinking that you have to go down this road or that road based on somebody not telling the truth. I think both of them could very easily be telling the truth. And that's what makes it all the more curious is, well, what did actually happen? What do you guys think?
I don't know that we'll ever actually know what happened because we don't have the ability to talk to Nolan at this point.
Yeah.
You made a very good note, Tony. I mean, yeah, you could say, hey, I'm going to go do this with this group of friends. I'm going to go do that with that group of friends. Different stories so that you can go off and do whatever the hell you want. Maybe he wanted to spend some time alone. I don't know. You know, he was getting ready to go off to school or live his life after graduation last year and all this stuff. We just don't know. So we don't know that. We also don't know if there's another story out there to be told. Was there somebody else that he met on the island? Was there another group of people that he knew and was going to go hang out with? We just don't know enough at this point to say that she's lying or the friends are lying. We're not there yet.
Yeah. We're not. And the thing is until we get all the information back, everything we're doing is just speculating and putting our learned experiences behind us and seeing, okay, this is one guy amongst a group of friends. They are all different. Did something happen there? Mm-hmm. And it could be as simple as Todd will tell you, I've done this myself. like you said, telling one group, hey, I'm going to go with this group, telling that group, I'm going to go with that group. And then you absconding with somebody else completely different or by yourself.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. Also, he's a very athletic young man. So he probably thought, I'm just going to take, I'm not going to say probably, because again, we don't know, but he could have thought, I'm just going to take a swim, and got caught. There are so many things, got caught in a riptide or whatever.
Yeah.
There are so many things that could have happened.
Yeah.
We just don't.
And we're all running everything through our own prisms of what have I done? Well, it doesn't really matter at all what you would have done, you know, because I run it through my head. I would have probably done pretty close to what I've theorized a little bit here. And again, I have nothing to base this on other than here's what I would have done, which is not worth anything. If I wanted to stay on the island, beautiful place, wonderful summer day. I like being by myself. I would have probably said, I might get a ride over here. If I was talking to the girl, maybe I'll see her later. I'm going to tell her this. I'm going to go off to a part of the island where there aren't boats, where there aren't people, and I'm just going to enjoy the peace for a little bit. And you can get out there and a riptide can take you and that can be the end. And it would be stupid, but I could see myself doing that at like 17 or 18 or 19 and not thinking very much about it, thinking because you think you're invincible, you can fight anything. Hell, people still try to argue that Nolan versus the riptide, like, well, he's a strong athlete. Yeah, it doesn't fucking matter if it's a riptide. I don't care if you're Superman. The riptide will win. But again, we don't know. We don't know if a riptide was even involved. But let's not argue about shit that's just like, you know, man versus anvil falling on his head. He's really strong, so when the anvil falls, he'll catch it. It's not how that works. There's so much lunacy in some of the arguments here. It doesn't make any sense. And at the end of the day, the answer is we don't know. We do not know. Another question, the state autopsy removed Nolan's throat. They say it's routine, but when the family's own pathologist got the body, he literally could not examine the neck. Well, of course not. That's because the throat has been removed, which means he can't rule out whether Nolan was strangled or choked or had any neck injuries at all. How is the family supposed to trust an investigation where the one piece of evidence that could answer one of the biggest questions is sitting in a state lab in Mississippi? No, you can't. And they have plenty of reason to ask questions, especially about the medical examiner and her track record, which we're going to be doing a story on next week. There's plenty of reason to ask questions. What is not up for necessarily a big debate is whether that's fairly routine. It is. It is fairly routine. And the people who have access to that piece of material, it is what it is. It's part of Nolan, or that piece of evidence. Does have a serious track record of not telling the truth or fucking with the truth or not examining things thoroughly enough. Mississippi sucks. Okay, in every sense of the word.
In a word.
I could say far worse things, but it's fucking horrible. So yes, the not having faith in the medical examiner and the track records in Mississippi up to this fucking day are horrific. You know, everybody's like, well, there's Emmett Till, and like, yeah, there's that, but there's like cases that are like just a couple years ago too, like. Those are the real historic ones. Shit hasn't changed all that much in a lot of Mississippi. In some places it has, in some places it hasn't. What we're seeing as reflections out of this friend group seems to be a group of young people who maybe have broken the mold, who aren't living in the shadow of the bullshit of the state and the racism that has manifested itself decade and generation after generation. Many of the friends said, they didn't say we don't see color, but we're a very diverse group. It's not a thing with us. And a lot of young people, it isn't. It just isn't.
A lot of young people.
And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So to have it constantly interjected here to these kids that, well, you killed him because he was black. It's like, what? I mean, okay, that's insane, but the place that we're going to get the evidence from that's going to prove this way or that way doesn't have a great track record, and they're the ones in control of the information, which I get why there's the questioning, why there's a lot of people wanting to make sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and that's great, but let's not add other letters into this that need crossing and dotting if they're not part of the equation to begin with.
Lisa and I have both lived in Mississippi. When this story came out, the first thing on my mind is this is not going to end well.
No.
And the reason why I said that is many, many different reasons. The first reason is because, of course, the race issue is going to come up in the discussion. It just is. That's the day and age that we live in. And I can understand that to a certain extent.
Sure.
The other piece is that history of law enforcement, medical investigations that don't quite do their job. And we've seen some things already in this that are questionable. And so that's where my red flag is kind of at this time. And the other piece of it is that no matter how this turns out, a young man is gone. We may never truly know what happened to him. And the sad thing is that, and as Tony, you said, these kids seem like they've broken that mold a little bit. It's the people above them that I'm most worried about. I'm worried about the parents. I'm worried about the investigators. I'm worried about that medical examiner. I'm worried about the judge when that comes down. I'm worried about the guy who said there's no foul play. That's the area I'm most worried about, because truly maybe nothing happened here that was nefarious. My question is, are we going to get the details if it was nefarious? That's the only question that I have in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it needs to be looked at closely. It just in inciting and people to believe something that we don't have the evidence to even go down some of those roads yet, I think is grossly irresponsible, especially for some of these friends who, you know, let's assume that they had nothing to do with this for a moment, for the sake of the argument, and they were all good friends and they grew up together and they didn't, race wasn't an issue for them and it never had been for them. Then to suddenly be accused of murdering one of your good friends, I mean, that's insane. I mean, that's really fucking evil to start accusing people of something like that if you don't have any evidence that points there. There's plenty of evidence of improper investigations in the past on other cases. Those kids have nothing to fucking do with that.
Right.
Those kids have nothing to do with that past. These kids are living a new life, and they're trying to start a new history and a new generation that's not going to fucking live that. So don't fucking go after them when they have nothing to do with it. Unless you actually have evidence that points to it, and we don't. We don't
have that at this time. But what we do have is Gen Z and Gen Alpha are... they are probably the least racist or
prejudice.
What's the word? Prejudice. Sure. Thank you. Yep. Or prejudiced generations ever. And I am so thrilled to see that, because these young people are the future of our world. But, and I say that, Gen X, boomers, and millennials, we are the ones that are running the world right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm an elder Gen X, so I'm right on that edge of being a boomer. And I can tell you that that generation, they will hide things. So I'm just saying that in Mississippi, it's even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, everything has to be prim, proper, and exactly the way it's supposed to be.
Asking questions, there's nothing wrong. Making accusations against, if you're going to make accusations, and once you have evidence, I have no problem making accusations.
Right, right.
But have the evidence first before you make the accusation, and make it against the right people.
They're doing
right now. It's just like, it's like, I get like everybody's. Exactly. Everybody's angry. Everybody wants answers. A kid is dead. So I get the outrage, but just. It's like being near an angry dog that's been attacked or something. It's going to start biting anybody around it, even its most people that it cares about and loves the most, because you're in a fit of rage and you're just lashing out at shit. That doesn't help anything either.
And the fact that they're doing blanket accusations against his entire friend group and then trying to narrow it down to one person. The thing is, we have no information. We can't say that John Smith A actually strangled him or that John Smith B hit him on the head.
Well,
I mean, we don't have any of that.
And the autopsy that has come back thus far that we have seen does not show there to be, you know, stabbing or anything of that sort. Now, I mean, strangling, that would be the thing that's been, and why do people go, well, maybe it was that? Because that's the only place that we don't have an answer to yet, because the information isn't there. So it's very easy to quickly want to fill in the blank based on the history, the well-documented shit history of Mississippi. I get that. But again, there are, not every person in Mississippi is hanging people in trees or having a Klan meeting on a boat.
But that, depending upon where you are in Mississippi, that is considered just something that happened.
It is. And that's sick and disturbing. And I think that's a very important thing, too, because I don't think a lot of the country has any fucking clue.
No.
I mean, I remember the first time I drove through Mississippi, I'm like, what the fuck happened here? I lived in
Yazoo City, which is an extremely poor town in Mississippi.
I know you guys live there, and I've driven through it several times. We went down to, we're driving down to Florida. We stayed in Jackson. Downtown, there's a hotel. I forget the name of it, but it was like redone. It was like abandoned forever. And of course, I said, I got to stay there. And it looked beautiful. I mean, they did beautifully redo it. But I'm guessing this is probably what it would be like to stay in, you know, the Hilton in Baghdad during the war or something.
Ooh.
Because it was like they valeted the car. I don't know where they took it, somewhere secure. But you got in front of the building, there's security, walk in the building, don't talk to anyone. There was people right there trying to pull me away from that already. I need to talk to you over here in the alley, just some random guy. Go in the building, don't leave the building. Okay. And the whole night, it's just sirens and cop cars, and they went into the bar and it's bulletproof glass. And it's just, it looks like a third world. And it's like, holy shit. And then driving through some of the city, just, it looks like the houses are burned out and bombed out. Like, what the fuck happened here? And this is a big city. And it's like, holy shit. And then drive through some of the smaller towns and drive through the sticks of Mississippi. You're going to find a different planet. You're going to find a part of the United States that you didn't think you know existed unless you've actually seen it. And so there are horrible things that go on unsaid out there in the sticks of Mississippi and in large areas as well. So I get it exists. But again, not everybody is that. And that's right. Important. And from the evidence that we've seen of these friends thus far, I'm not seeing that. And a month into this case, if there was, these kids document everything. If there was horrible things in the track record of them being horrible to him in the past, or there's racist shit out there, trust me, that would have leaked out by now, I think, from that friend circle. Some, they're not all like, oh, we're never, people don't conspire that way. People can't hold secrets. And somebody could become a millionaire pretty quick if there was some sort of horrendous video of their friends doing or saying horrible things about Nolan. TMZ would pay big fucking money for that, by the way, that exists. So if somebody has that, bring it out. Sell it to TMZ. Make a mint. Pay for college and your first five homes. Like, you could do it right now if that exists. The fact that we haven't seen that yet tells me a lot.
And here's another thing. Everybody is focusing on his friend group. There were, 300, 400 more kids and people on that island at that time. It could have been nothing to do with his friend group. We don't know.
Yeah. We just don't know. And that's the thing. If it goes somewhere criminal, we will follow it. Right now, we don't know. And the evidence that we have seen, where people are pointing at their friends, doesn't seem to be going that direction. Mm-mm. Could it be somewhere else, though? 1,000%. But mm-hmm. We don't know the answer to it. I'm sorry some people in the comment section are mad we're not going down this route or that route, but we're in the middle, and we don't know. We don't know. And that's where this sits right now. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to discuss and follow wherever this case may go.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Out at McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken meal deal o un $6 McDouble meal deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Moto Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Moto Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made, because that's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.